Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at sfarmmarketing.com.
From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the May 10 edition of Commodity Week. The United States Department of Agriculture released the World Agricultural Supply and Demand Estimates and the first look at the U.S. crop production projections on the 10th day of May. We'll discuss those today during this edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Later in this half hour, we'll talk about the weather forecast with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City as our special guest. Our panelists today include in studio Brian Stark of the Andersons and on the phone lines Dan Zwicker of CGB Enterprises and Mike Zuzolo of Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. You can always find us online at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at ADM.com/FarmerView.
Well, gentlemen, let's start with this question. Brian Stark, when the USDA released its WASDE figures this morning, it showed a couple of things to explain how it came to the 158, given the delayed planting in the United States. One of them was a list of how quickly farmers can plant corn. The other was just about the drought to the west of I-35. Can you reconcile both of those with 158 bushel yield?
I don't know if you can reconcile both of those. It's too early to say, but I will say, at least in our backyard in East Central Illinois, it's been awfully wet, and it's really tough at this point to make any type of projection. I think the USDA did the best job they could in realizing delayed planting, and also the drought was going to have some potential impact on yield expectations, and they adjusted to the best of their ability.
Mike Zuzolo?
Yeah, on the back end of April, Todd, it seemed like when we were running 10%, 13% corn planting in 2008 and in 2011, the national average yield ended up being just under 154 in 08 and just over 147 in 2011. I think maybe that's where the new calculation that they took so much time to talk about at the winter Ag Outlook meeting, maybe that came in and got superseded by the fact that some of these years where we got started late did indeed hit our yields, and they're trying to be a little bit preemptive there.
And Dan Zwicker.
Well, it is what it is. I mean, I think you just have to view it as a starting point of what they kind of think we're at. Their model is heavily weighted to planting dates, and they did take into account some of the drier weather in the far western belt. So, you know, I guess I just view it as a starting point. Last year, they took the way high side because of the early planting and only missed it by 34 or 40 bushels per acre. So it'll be interesting to see what the ultimate number will be after a growing season.
Mike, during the closing market report on Friday afternoon, you said the most important number to you, at least maybe from the farmer's perspective, was the average cash price for the marketing year, which now ranges from $4.30 to $5.10. Why was that the case?
Well, I think mainly because the middle of that's $4.70, and we're dealing with the cash price right now in Illinois at around $5. And so we're really close in comparison to the beans. And we've seen all year long that the trade, whether it's right or wrong, because of the old crop supplies, has really respected the tightness of supplies in beans, whereas the corn continues to be drugged down by the wheat. And so I think you're a lot closer to their average price from the get-go. And with a 14 billion bushel production supply number, that makes me think, okay, if we're only 30 cents away, whereas in the beans we're $1.30 away in terms of the average price versus the current cash price for new crop in Illinois, maybe the beans have a lot more premium to lose if we have a good crop year from here on out.
And stay with the corn just a bit for me, Brian. Did those numbers, that range, make sense to you?
It did, and I think to add on to Mike's comments, that you're talking about a cash price now that is closing in on potential break-even scenarios for a lot of growers for corn. And I think one thing we've tried to recommend to our customers, if you're thinking about switching, and at least in our area where I would estimate we're less than 5% planted, Illinois has really struggled with the moisture, and it may be the end of next week before we get in. So if they start thinking about switching to beans, I think ultimately you have to look, like, as Mike said, with the difference in premium, there may be some weakness to definitely hedge those beans.
All right. And Dan, would you agree with this idea that if they're thinking about switching, if they're at that break-even point by the end of the year, end of the month, that is, that they really need to think about hedging the beans along the way?
Oh, I don't know. I think they've got 10 days yet before they have to make any of those decisions. I think the critical date's going to be more like May 20th, how much progress they can get done between now and then. Remember, we've got a whole growing season ahead of us yet. Granted, the market is in a counter-seasonal decline. It is going completely opposite of what one would normally expect when you look at long-term averages, very similar to last year. Last year we worked our way into a June low and then basically rallied out of a June low and never looked back. So whether or not that's going to be the case this year or not, we'll have to see what kind of summer weather pattern we have. But I don't know if one wants to switch any acreage at this point and begin hedging soybeans yet.
Mike, what did you see on the global front for corn that interested you?
I think the biggest thing was that we had that corn production number come in for the United States of over 14 billion bushels, but we really couldn't find as much demand to offset that, and the global numbers really started to kick into high gear. We ended up with coarse grains at 186.13 for 13-14. We're coming off of 154 this current crop year on today's report. So we continue to see this building number in the coarse grains and in the corn. That's contrasting to the wheat, and that's kind of a distinction that's probably important to make here, Todd, is that we are starting to see a decline in the supply of wheat globally, and that's off of improved feeding and improved demand, not necessarily lower supply. So we have seen a little bit of a switch there with the global numbers.
Some numbers, speaking of numbers, to throw in here at this point. Wheat futures did finish the July contract at 7.04 and a quarter. That was down 16 and three quarters on the week. The corn futures finished the May down 11 and three quarters from last Friday at 6.87 and three quarters. And December corn at 5.29 and a half or 24 cents lower. May beans up 33 and a quarter cents at $14.88. November at 12.05 and a half, down 15 and three quarters. Maybe it was the discrepancy between those two, Brian Stark, that was of most interest to you.
Yeah, I think that was. For me, as you look forward, I think Mike touched on a good topic. And I think as far as the contrasting moves in the different commodities, one would look at corn. And really for us, it's been demand problem as you move forward. I think the supply grows, and if you just look at the export expected demand this year, we dropped 50 million bushels according to the government today. That was offset by a 50 million bushel increase in ethanol. But you look out to next year, and we're only forecasting a 1.3 billion bushel demand factor in export. There's a glut of supply potentially in the world, and I think ultimately, regardless of summer weather, one could make an argument that we would have to repeat last year to get us into a really bullish scenario, given the supply we're expected to project versus the given demand.
What did you see by the time the week ended, Dan Zwicker, on your charts?
Well, we're still holding above the late April low. were down against it. I mean, the April low on December corn was 517. We went to 22.75 here today. The low on November beans, I think, was 1187.5, and we went to 1197 or whatever. I think from a chartist point of view, that is what they're going to be looking at, whether or not this decline that we saw here on Friday, can the brakes can be put on it on Monday, and then the market can begin to rebuild and start focusing on actual plantings and overall crop prospects more so than a set of guesses on supply-demand balance sheets.
Can I take up the consumption number or total usage number for corn with each of you, and maybe we'll do Dan and Mike and then Brian? It's now 0.92 billion bushels. That compares to last year at 11.135. It's a 16% increase. Do you think there's a 16% increase in the marketplace, Dan?
No, and I think that's probably why the market reacted more bearish to the report than what one would actually think. Most people in the trade feels that these demand numbers that USDA have got plugged in are way high or way optimistic, and that we're probably closer to a 2.5 billion bushel carry out. The only reason the trade, there was a lot of talk prior to, I've been into a lot of think tank meetings that if we would have 162 bushel year yield, we would have a 3 billion bushel ending stocks level. So by USDA shaving off 5 bushels or 5.5 bushels off of that trend line yield that they use in the ag forum, they were able to take a 500,000 bushels basically off of the production number. Otherwise, you would have had a carry out about 2.5 billion. But this is all old news. I mean, the trade has been talking about this for some time, and that's where the bear is really coming from, is that when you look at South America, you've got a corn crop down there that's at 102, 103 million. That's up about 8 million tons from last year. Their soybean number is just phenomenal, 135 million tons compared to 106 million last year. They've got 30 million more tons of beans available to move into the world export market. So when you look at USDA's corn balance sheet at 1,300, I know that looks low compared to where we've been over the past 5 or 10 years, but I question whether or not we can regain that much back. And then you look at their ethanol number. I'm not a complete expert on ethanol, but I do know that the gasoline consumption is going down. We're going to be short a bunch of RINs next year, and USDA has got ethanol production climbing. So I can't figure that one out. So I do think that the demand numbers are, and then the feed usage number, they basically bump that from, you know, this year we're at 4.4 billion and they're at 5.3, almost went up a billion bushels in feed, and I question whether or not we can regain that much.
Mike?
Yeah, I have nothing to add to that except that the overall market sense was, after the report, Todd, that the pre-estimates, the average trade guess in the corn was pretty much met on the mark with that 2 billion carryover. Beans was about 11% higher in the actual carryover versus the average trade guess, and wheat about 7%. I think the trade really honed into those numbers as well as far as the distinction between average trade guess and actual, and that's what we traded for most of the rest of Friday.
What would you suggest producers do at this time, Mike?
I'm more in the concept and mindset that if we're going to start to see switching, and there are people, you know, south of 36 in Illinois, south of 74 in Indiana, really talking about switching at this point if they can't get dried out in the next week. I'm of the mindset if they do switch, they need to get their beans locked in and then come back around and look at corn. I guess I'm starting to develop more of a concept that maybe we're in like a 1993 type market where we have a late May to mid-June low, and that's one of the biggest lows that we can get in place going into harvest, just because the way the high-frequency trade has really come in and stepped into the market with no one taking the opposing side of the order, so to speak.
Mike, one final question on the switch, and maybe we'll ask a couple of the other folks to answer this too. Do you think there's really that much of a possibility to switch? Usually farmers have things pretty locked down by this time of year.
I agree, and I think corn farmers want to grow corn. But one guy said it to me this way, so I'll use his words. He said, "I've never been in this kind of a position since 1983. This is a guy from west of Springfield, and he said, in 1983, I got in at the end of May for a few days, and then it was late June. I probably would have been better just switching to beans at that point."
Brian, what do you think?
No, I would agree with what Mike said. I think most guys in Illinois want to grow corn. I think they'll press that up against the final planting date for us around June 5th. But there will be some guys in outlying areas that do aggressively switch if they don't make progress here in the next week to 10 days.
And Dan, very shortly?
I think they'll plant corn all the way into Memorial Day, first part of June, and then go from there.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is the May 10 edition. Our panelists include Dan Zwicker. He's with CGB Enterprises, Mike Zuzulo, Global Commodity Analytics and Consulting, and Brian Stark of the Andersons. Back in 2 minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated.
This is Jim Angel, state climatologist located at the Illinois State Water Survey at the Prairie Research Institute on the campus of the University of Illinois. May so far has been wet. The statewide average rainfall was 1.9 inches. However, the wettest areas were in the western and southwestern parts of the state with amounts of 2 to 5 inches. Amounts were a little less in north-central and southeastern Illinois and ranged from 1 to 2 inches. The lightest amounts were in the northeast corner of the state and were generally less than half an inch. Temperatures were 1 to 3 degrees above average in central and northern Illinois and 1 to 3 degrees below average in southern Illinois. According to the National Weather Service, high pressure will arrive this weekend and stay into next week, giving us a break from the rain. High temperatures on Saturday are expected to range from the lower 60s in the north to the upper 60s in the south. Overnight lows will be in the upper 30s in the north to the 40s in the south. Sunday will be a little cooler with highs in the mid-50s in the north and the mid-60s in the south. Lows Monday morning will range from the mid-30s in the north to the low 40s in southern Illinois. Monday will be cool as well with highs in the mid-60s across the state. Highs will be in the upper 70s and 80s on Tuesday and Wednesday before cooling slightly on Thursday. The next chance for rain is on Wednesday and Thursday as another low-pressure system moves through the Midwest. This is Jim Angel, state climatologist at the Illinois State Water Survey.
Support for Commodity Week comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of 5 new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids. Available at adm.com/farmerview.
This is the May 10 edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason. Our panelists include Dan Zwicker and Mike Zuzulo, along with Brian Stark. On the phone line today is Drew Lerner at World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, thank you for taking the time. I know we talked to you during the week every day and then during the closing mark report on Wednesday afternoons, but I'd like you to take a bit further outlook than we normally do during those programs at the growing season. Have you been doing some work for the summertime?
Sure. I think the best way to put the summer is that we need to focus more on what is or used to be normal, whatever that is. The focus does seem to show an active weather pattern for the balance of the growing season. We will have a ridge of high pressure that will show up at times in the plains, but it looks to be a low amplitude ridge, one that will likely come and go. With the exception of the southern half of the plains, where the base of the ridge will likely be anchored for a big part of the summer. But for the rest of the region, including the U.S. Corn Belt and, of course, the northern and central plains, I think there's a pretty good chance we'll see a lot of variety in our weather over the summer. Some of this cool bias that we've been dealing with for the past several weeks will minimize a little bit, but it's still going to be there. We're going to find little shots of cool air still coming around all the way through the heart of the summer. And as each one of these little waves of coolness comes around, it'll tend to make the ridge of high pressure a little bit weaker and at the same time provide a perfect trigger mechanism for setting off some showers and thunderstorms. Now, all that sounds really wonderful, I know, right? You know, perfect growing season and nothing to worry about. But the reality is we still have tremendous subsoil moisture deficits out in the plains and some of the western Corn Belt. And as we start getting into warmer weather, and believe it or not, it is going to come eventually, we will probably start evaporating moisture faster than we're picking up on rain, and these crops are going to have to churn back towards that subsoil moisture reserve and to continue the normal development. Well, that's where the problem is going to begin. So even though we will have a normal summer, portions of the plains and the western Corn Belt are still going to find themselves in trouble moisture-wise because there's not going to be enough moisture there for the crops to fall back on during the heights of our summer warm weather, which is normal.
Drew, just out of curiosity, I guess, what are you guys seeing here in the next couple of weeks for planting potential? It seems like the 6 to 10, 11 to 15 day, as you look out, seem to dry out, and then when you get closer to realizing those dates, add moisture back in. Has it been tough trying to figure out the pattern we're in as far as potential for planting progress?
Well, certainly it's been frustrating to a certain degree. You know, when we look at the model data day-to-day, it gets to be really frustrating because certainly the American model that we use quite a bit is a very unstable model, and it just doesn't seem to do a very good job. When we focus on other tools, we seem to do a better job. We get a better understanding as to what's going on. We have our own trend model here that we use, and it is it's a real nice stabilizing force, and it gives us a chance to look at the bigger picture. And in that trend model, for weeks, it has shown that there would be a cooler bias still prevailing through most of the spring season, and that it would constantly bring us opportunities for rain to come and go across the heart of the Midwest. So it never looked like we were going to fall back into a droughty pattern in the heart of the Midwest, but it also showed that there would tend to be a limited amount of recovery in the plains. And I think this is a very good tool to use. There's also the GFS model, the American model that everyone follows, there's an ensemble to that where they take multiple computer forecast model runs of the GFS model, and they average them together. And that tends to be a much more stable model to use. So we've been looking at that quite a bit. And I'll tell you what, all this week, that model has been screaming loud that there would be rain in the second week of the outlook. And the operational model runs, you know, were dragging their feet all week until this morning when finally one of them came around. And now we've got, you know, most of them on board with that. So, yeah, it's really frustrating to be able to get a good forecast, but there are some tools out there that you have to find, unfortunately. But it does look like as we go forward through this next two-week period, we're going to flip-flop back and forth, and it's going to be critically important that producers this week get a chance to get into the fields and get as much done as they can because the following week does look to be a little bit on the wet side again.
Dan?
Drew, I've been a big follower of sunspots for a long period of time, and I've noticed the last month here we've seen a big uptick in sunspot activity. And as I remember learning the sunspot cycle, that kind of indicated that when you had a big pickup of sunspot activity and we're supposed to crest sometime here in 13, that would have a tendency to warm the climate more so than probably what we've had over the past couple months.
Well, I think there's some truth to that, and then you have to put it all into perspective. Where we are on sunspots relative to the big picture, and what I mean by that is going back and looking at all of the cycles, the 11-year cycles that have occurred in recent years, very first thing you should notice is that this particular cycle we're in is a dwarf compared to the cycles we had in the 70s and the 80s. What I mean by that is that the number of sunspots is dramatically reduced in this particular 11-year cycle that we're in right now relative to that which occurred in like the 1980s. And what that says is that, yeah, we're at a solar maximum right now, and under normal conditions that means we're getting the most energy from the sun. But when you make comparisons to the current cycle, with those that have occurred here, you know, in the last 20 years, we are nowhere near as active on the sun as we have been. And so the amount of heat that we're really picking up from the sun, or just in general energy, is still a very small percentage of what it used to be. And so for that reason, this atmosphere may continue to have actually a cooling bias that will continue to come and go for a few years down the road. And so the old traditional thinking about these solar cycles may be a little bit different for a while.
Hey, Drew, I have a question as it relates to weather patterns over the longer term. I think, but I'm not certain, that during the springtime months, most of our rainfall, it sweeps up from the Gulf of Mexico, and that it might originate from winds that come out of the Atlantic Ocean. And then as we get into the later months of the year, into the summer months, those turn to the westerlies for us coming off the Pacific. And I'm wondering, if we're dry out west, does that mean that we will be drier further into the Corn Belt over time?
Well, I think that we will see some drier tendencies in the middle of the country, but I'm not quite sure it can be pointed with that particular set of tools that are used. I think it's got more to do with the sea surface temperatures that are anomalous right now on either side of the U.S. coastal regions. Let me get specific here. The tropical Atlantic has a considerable amount of warmer biased temperatures that have been around for quite some time. And at the same time, we have cooler than normal ocean temperatures off the west coast of North America. And by the way, that cool bias off the coast of the west coast is that negative phase of PDO that you hear some people talk about periodically. And the warm water in the tropical Atlantic is that warm phase of the AMO. But all you really need to know is that when we have the setup like we have right now, there is a tendency for ridginess to build in the middle of the country. And it's a very strong correlation, actually. If you go back in time, I did a study here just a few weeks ago correlating Texas droughts with this phenomenon where you've got the warm Atlantic and you've got the cool Pacific. And this is really one of the reasons why the drought occurred like it did last year. There was a lot of support with this pattern being what it is. And we will see ridginess come back into the middle of the country this year because we still have the same setup in the Western Hemisphere. To a certain degree, what you stated about the winds, Todd, those are legitimate observations, but it's just one of the cogs in a very big machine. And sometimes that might be a dominating feature that we can use for a forecasting tool. Other times you've got to use this other pattern.
Drew, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Drew Lerner is with World Weather Incorporated. Time for a final word from our panelist. We'll start with Mike Zuzulo.
With the May report now over, Todd, when the fund selling is met with end-user buying, let's be watching for that, because that may be giving us a bottom in price. I say this because no one's been there to stand in the way of the funds, and we have to remember that discount in the futures right now with tight cash, that March, May, July trading may be very exciting.
Dan Zwicker?
Still think May 20th is a critical time date where everybody begins to bite their fingernails, so we're still 10 days away from that, at least when you look at the past. And if corn planting is way behind by then, I think the market then will rally into June.
And Brian Stark?
I think we need to remain disciplined in our marketing plan, because as this report's passed, it'll turn back into weather and it's bound to remain volatile.
That wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. I'm Todd Gleason.